Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Gourmet Reader Show, where we cook up some literary ingredients and feast. Today, I will be talking about the 10 best and worst books I've read in 2014. So let's cue up the sounds of cooking and royalty-free music. So to start off this show, I felt it necessary to give you a brief background of who I am and why I'm making this list. Back in 2011, I was a Tumblr addict, and saw a lot of posts about people planning to read 50 books in the year of 2012. You know, 2012, the year the world was supposed to end. Anyway. I decided to look back on the books I read in 2011 and saw I had only read 11, 7 of those being Harry Potter. I guess I should also note that I later figured out that I read about 20 books, but back to thinking I read 11. I was disgusted with myself as a reader, so I decided I needed to participate in the 50 book challenge. Through a series of events, I created a blog, gave it an easy title, The Reader, and began writing book reviews. I completed the 50 books of 2012 challenge with 58 books read. What was great about the challenge was that it gave me an excuse to read books I may have never picked up. I read young chapter books, nonfiction, picture books, books for school. Yeah, I know that last one is a bit much, but I hated reading for school. And what was awesome is that writing reviews forced me to think critically about art. I tell you all of this because while the 50 book challenge is over, part of it is still ingrained in me, and continues to flourish with my blog. So, with that in mind, let's move to our list of the 10 best and worst books that I read in 2014. This list is in no particular order, and it is literally 10 books. Not 10 best and 10 worst. Just 10 best and worst books. The list is combined with the best and worst, so it's not like I'm doing the 5 best first and the 5 worst. It's just me saying a book and saying if it's the best or the worst. I should also note that these books are a first-time read for me. I reread some books this year, but I wanted to push them out even though they were pretty amazing because I wanted to put the new books I read on the list to give them their moment to shine in the spotlight. Number 1. The World According to Garp by John Irving. This book qualifies as one of the best books I've read this year. I really didn't expect to love it. Truth be told, I was very torn at the death of Robin Williams and came across this book because he starred in the film adaptation, which I had never heard of. I would have never picked this book up otherwise. To my surprise, it was really good. The characters were brilliantly flawed, the notion of celebrity was very well analyzed, and the story was engaging. It was just a solid book. The book begins with Garp's mother, before he was even born, and narrates her life and how Garp was conceived. It's vulgar, it's blunt, but that is what I love about this book. It doesn't shy away from the stuff we don't want to hear. It gets right into the messy territory, which really foreshadows the entire book because the whole thing is a mess. In a good way, of course. Once Garp is born, the book follows his life. We see him at school and in sports and getting married and living overseas, and it's all a beautiful mess. To use a cliche. There is one reoccurring plot point in the book about a girl named Ellen James that I really, really loved. Just a warning, I will be talking spoilers here, so if you don't want to listen or be spoiled, fast forward about a minute or two. In the book, there are these women who call themselves Ellen Jamesians, who all cut their tongues out and carry small notepads and pencils around to communicate with people. The reason they cut their tongues out is to protest what happened to a little girl named Ellen James, who was raped and had her tongue cut out by her attacker at the age of 11 years old. Garp is disgusted by these women for inflicting self-harm in order to protest what happened, and soon meets the real Ellen James as an adult who also hates what her followers are doing. Later, James writes an article against her followers, and one responds, and I quote, "I have never been raped, and I have never wanted to be. I have never been with a man, and I have never wanted to be either. My whole life's meaning has been to share the suffering of Ellen James," end quote. I find this so sick, yet it is also a fascinating comment on celebritized culture. Ellen James never chose to suffer. Overall, it is just a really good commentary on the public's interpretation of media and how we forget to humanize public figures but see them more as ideas. I can use a personal example. When I was younger, I really liked the Jonas Brothers, and I'm not afraid to admit that. I still enjoy their music as well. I guess I was a little afraid to admit that. Anyway, I was a fan of Nick Jonas, and he had diabetes, or he has diabetes. And he wrote a song on one of their albums called A Little Bit Longer that was documenting, you know, when he found out about his disease and dealing with it. And I thought about that and how me and many other girls really responded and felt like we were with Nick Jonas when he sang that song and we sympathized with him. But we really didn't know what was going on. You know, it's like saying we would try to get diabetes to sympathize with Nick Jonas, who got diabetes. That essentially equates to what these Ellen Jamesians were doing. Overall, this was a great book. I would highly recommend it. Number 2, The Gospel According to Disney by Mark I. Pinsky. This book is going on the worst book list. It was not good. Part of me felt very let down by this book because it was not what I expected. And I know I can't really fault a book for that. However, this book can be faulted. Why? Well, because of the title. It can be taken two ways. The way I interpreted it was that the author would be analyzing the Disney movies and discussing gospel themes and elements. But the other way to interpret this title is that the author would be analyzing the Disney company and stating the beliefs and rituals of Disney if it were a religion. Now, let me note that while the first topic is what I expected, the later is still interesting. Here is why the book failed in my eyes. The execution of this book was 75% terrible. The chapters were literally movie summaries and a bunch of sporadic facts. They didn't expand on the films at all. As an English major, I was taught that when you write an essay, you don't need to summarize your material of focus. It is safe to assume your reader is familiar with the content if they are reading more in-depth material. But Pinsky comes off as an amateur with all of his summaries. It's, quite frankly, really freaking annoying. And secondly, the chapters have little to no mention of the gospel. All they did was rehash old political points and arguments about the Disney company. It has all been said and done before. This book was just plain awful. I won't say it isn't worth looking at. There are some great chapters about Walt Disney's childhood and Michael Eisner's life and the Baptist boycotts, but these don't amount to much. They are interesting and worth reading, but forgettable. Overall, this book had a lot of potential, but squashed it like a bug. Definitely in the worst book category of 2014. Number 3, Bonjour Tristesse by Françoise Sagan. Hope I pronounced that correct. I think what really amazes me about this book and why it has made it on my best book list is the intelligence behind it all. It was written by a 17-year-old girl. Let that sink in for a moment. A 17-year-old girl. A 17-year-old girl wrote a book about a promiscuous father with an equally promiscuous daughter, and managed to not only create a realistic plot and characters, but ingrained themes and truths in this extremely well-written text that many authors only dream of accomplishing. Hell, I wish to accomplish this. At 17, my writing couldn't stand up to a flea when compared to this book. It is very good. The novel follows our main heroine, Cecil, who is on vacation with her father and his lover, Elsa. No, not Elsa from Frozen. When an old family friend named Anne comes to visit, Cecil's father becomes enraptured with her, and they get engaged. While Cecil adores Anne, she also despises her strict way of living and constant need for control. It becomes her mission to remove Anne from their lives. By far the best element of this book is Cecil. She is a young lady who, by all appearances, resembles every other teenage girl on the planet. She likes to lay in the sun and tan, and flirt with guys and gossip. Yet the author easily keeps Cecil humanized, beyond those traits. While Cecil is irrationally jealous of Anne, the author makes sense of the irrationality, and it makes sense. You get that Cecil is obsessed over her love interest, but it doesn't take over the story or force it on the reader. It just adds another aspect to Cecil's character. Cecil could easily be viewed as shallow and spoiled, but the book tries its best to show there is more to a person than their stereotypes, which I really loved. Keep this in mind as I plan to bring it up in another review. This book was also very, very sad. Hell, the title freaking tells you it's sad. Bonjour Tristesse translates to Hello Sadness in French. I don't think I've ever felt this sad since reading The Collector by John Fowles. Actually, scratch that. Bonjour Tristesse is super sad, but no book made me want to chuck it in the trash and never see it again like The Collector. Seriously, that ending was a nasty pill to swallow. But anyway, my point is that Bonjour Tristesse was sad, but in a good way, in that it really makes your heart ache. You care about these characters. You're invested to the point of no return. None of them are simple, but really complex. Like Game of Thrones complex. They aren't just bad or good, but gray, which is really impressive coming from a 17-year-old girl. Definitely a best book of 2014. Go and check it out. Number 4, Love Letters to the Dead by Ava Dellaria. I think it is safe to say that teenage girls are often personified in popular YA fiction, and fiction in general, and Hollywood and television and you name it, as petty and lackluster with no personality to their name other than their clothes and what guys they're going to go out with next. An example of this is Gossip Girl, or the Seven Deadly Sins series on Lifetime. Twilight is another example, where a girl literally has no personality, with a guy at her side. Even Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games has little personality beyond archery and Peeta and Gale. I'm gonna get a lot of hate for that one, but know that The Hunger Games is one of my favorite books. It is hard for me not to compare this book with the one I just discussed, Bonjour Tristesse. Both books feature a teenage girl on the verge of womanhood and figuring out what love is, yet Bonjour Tristesse does it 10 times better than this book ever could. I think authors featuring girls of this age in their novel as the main protagonist are presented with a unique challenge because their typical interests in guys and shopping and clothes will often come off as shallow and one-dimensional. But if it is done right, a writer can beautifully portray these feelings and give the girl her humanity rather than denying her the option. Love Letters to the Dead is quite generic in that aspect. Bonjour Tristesse, however, blossoms. Now, I won't spend the entire snippet comparing the two books, so let's talk about why Love Letters to the Dead is among the worst books I read in 2014. This book was said to be the next Perks of Being a Wallflower, and was backed by public figures like Emma Watson and the actual author of Perks, Stephen Chbosky. Now, Perks of Being a Wallflower is one of my favorite books, and I don't think Love Letters even compares to how good that book is. Sure, it is similar in style, but our main characters are complete opposites. And while this points to the author's character painting abilities, I think it also has to do with gender. Charlie defies the norms of what it means to be a guy, while the main character of Love Letters just sits in a pool of stereotypes. I'm sure you are sick of comparisons, so let me get to the heart of this book. Our heroine is Laurel. On the first day of school, she is given an assignment to write a letter to a dead person. Laurel completes the assignment, but doesn't hand it in. Instead, she keeps a full diary throughout the year, writing to the typical dead celebrities like Judy Garland, River Phoenix, Kurt Cobain, etc. Throughout the book, we learn Laurel's older sister is dead, and we slowly discover how she died and how it has changed Laurel. We also hear a lot about Laurel's crush, Sky. Yes, that is his name, Sky. The book is narrated through these quote-unquote love letters, or more importantly, diary entries, and this is a really hard point of view to pull off as a writer because not only do diaries have no structure, but they reveal 100% truth. So essentially, the writer has to form some coherence while also holding back key story ingredients without being obvious. Unfortunately for this book, I think the author failed with the point of view. There was never a point where I felt lost in the book. I was always very aware that it wasn't real and an author had written it. And besides that, Laurel is so cliche and stereotypical. I couldn't stand her. She was whiny to the level of Bella Swan. It was as if the author was pleading with the reader to sympathize with this poor girl. And I did to a point. What happened to her was pretty terrible. But after a while, it was just so forced and annoying. This was definitely one of the worst books that I read this year. Which is a shame because I expected it to be really, really good. Number 5, The Silver Linings Playbook by Matthew Quick. So, like everyone else, I loved watching The Silver Linings Playbook on the big screen and knew I had to read the novel. I think I partially loved it because my team is the Philadelphia Eagles, but there's more to it than just that. The book is just as amazing as the film and is another addition to my best books of 2014 list. To reference Perks of Being a Wallflower once again, this book really gave off the same sort of vibe. And I know Love Letters did as well, but this book did it, again, much better. In many ways, I found this book to be the adult Perks of Being a Wallflower. The main characters are similar, and they are both piecing their lives back together, just in different ways. The protagonist of this book is Pat. Pat is bipolar and has recently been released from a mental hospital where he spent time after a bad incident involving his wife. Pat narrates the story with very simple language, imagery, and reasoning, which critics have said to be a fault in the book, but I really liked it. The story still had a lot of depth, but read quickly. The narration is also true to Pat's character, who is very straight-sighted. His commentary revolves around the here and now, which points to him as a character almost learning to grow up again. Mental health is a huge part of the plot. A lot of the story deals with Pat questioning the ethics of him having to take medicine, because when he takes it, his mind is clouded. This is where the silver lining comes into play. Pat is really trying to focus on the good in his life, and not the bad. So he looks for the silver linings, and I really respect that in a character. Sure, the guy has problems, but he is really trying to be conscious of his happiness, which is not something everybody can do. I also love the story because it lets us know that we really are all messed up in some way. We all have problems. The world is full of problems, but at least we have some say in how we react. Overall, this was an amazing book. Definitely on the best list. Number 6, The Moviegoer by Walker Percy. Okay, so first let me state that critically, this book is in the air. I am saying this because I don't feel I really got this book, which is partially why it is on this list as a worst book. Perhaps Walker Percy is too sophisticated of a writer for me, because I really expected to love this book, but was held back by the writing style. I didn't understand it at all. Hell, I don't even know how I got through the book, seeing as I was confused 99% of the time. I barely knew the plot or the main character's name and could hardly explain it to myself, let alone another person. I'm not even sure how I wrote a book review on it. I almost feel stupid admitting this out loud, but it's the truth. I love complex writing, don't get me wrong, but this was very different from what I have encountered. I guess my point is that the writing was too often trying to be evasive and complicated, and therefore it was distracting as a reader. I believe the writing should work with the story and vice versa. One shouldn't try and outperform the other, which is what I feel The Moviegoer did, and I just can't look past that. I have to add this is one of the worst books that I read in 2014. Number 7, Bambi, A Life in the Woods, by Felix Salten. Bambi, A Life in the Woods, is perhaps my top book of 2014. Most people are familiar with this story via the Disney movie, which in my opinion is a very fair adaptation. Where it leaves out bits of story is made up for by the beautiful animation and classical symphonies that are naturalistically carried throughout the film. Both versions are excellent. But returning to the book, what I loved was the simplicity of the writing and the storytelling. This minimalistic approach, which I should add is very well executed in the film, is beautifully illustrated throughout the novel. What makes the book stand out beyond the film, though, is the message of solidarity. Yes, both versions take that approach, but the book takes it to an extreme and shows Bambi's father training him to be the lonely buck of the forest, whose only purpose is to be a watchful guardian. Patronus, anyone? That's a Harry Potter reference, in case you didn't know. Anyway, one of my favorite passages is this short chapter when the forest is transitioning from autumn to winter, and it is being narrated by leaves on a tree who are falling off and one is scared to die. Tell me that is not creative. That is such a poignant and simple way of breathing life into the character of the forest, and it really speaks to the whimsical tone of the book. Everything is just so well done to a point. I'm really surprised that so many people are unfamiliar with this book and that it isn't used in more schools. It is so freaking good. Overall, really solid book. Definitely one of the best I read in 2014. Number 8, Disney After Dark by Ridley Pearson. Okay, we've made it to this book. This book has to be one of the worst books I have ever read. That's right, not only is it on my list of worst books I read in 2014, but it is the worst out of all terrible books I read this year, and is easily the worst book I've read in all of my life. And I've read The Twilight Saga. I know bad books. This book was so bad that I wanted to rip out all of the pages, go to every bookstore, steal those copies of the books and the series, and throw them in a tub of gasoline and light them on fire. I would rather sit through Batman and Robin twice than read this book again. It was that awful. So what made it a class F for full of crap? Well, basically everything. The plot, the characters, the dialogue, the stereotypes, the inconsistencies, the insanely instilled assumption that kids' literature needs to be dumbed down. This book has it all. There is a classic debate that many people like to use when kids become really engrossed in an awful book. Parents say, and I quote, "Well, at least they're reading," end quote. What? At least they're reading? What kind of argument is that? That's like if a kid chooses to eat at McDonald's and someone says, "Well, at least they're eating." That wouldn't make sense, and neither does this. Now, I can admit to being a literary snob and want to believe people can read whatever they want, but to go back to the analogy I just used, why would you want to read fast food for the mind? It isn't helping you, but can be dangerous in the long run. A book should strive to be class A cuisine. Sure, it may come in different forms, but it is always clear when the authenticity is there. This book? Yeah, it has no authenticity whatsoever. It is a load of BS. Number 9. Life of Pi by Jan Martel. Life of Pi has to be one of the most fascinating books I've ever read, and in all honesty, I kind of expected it to be that way. I mean, when you know a book is going to be about a teen surviving on a raft in the middle of the ocean with a Bengal tiger, you know it will be obscure but really good. But what truly made me love this book, beyond the brilliant premise, was its deep questions about animal rights and religion. It wasn't just a mere survival story, but a complex reflection on what it means to be human. And for that, I am appreciative. Jan Martel is an amazing writer. This story could have failed in so many ways, but he was able to keep the ship above water.
Hey, nice pun!
Thanks. He not only mastered writing about the physical aspect of surviving, but the psychological aspect. It was really well done. This was by far one of the best books I read in 2014. And last but not least, number 10, Housekeeping by Marilyn Robinson. While the organization of this list may suggest this book is a worst book of 2014, it is actually a best book. I planned to have an equal amount of best to worst books, but I just couldn't leave any of these best books off the list. And besides, I consider it a good thing that I read more great books this year as opposed to awful books. Out of all the amazing authors I have read this year, Marilyn Robinson has to be my favorite. As a teenager and college student, I longed for intellectual writing from a Christian author. Let me put that statement in perspective for you. As a teenager, I was very commercial in how I expressed my faith. You could say I was the annoying goody-goody who listened to Christian music, read Christian books, and rooted for the New Orleans Saints. But as I got older, I noticed an inauthenticity to all of this and distanced myself from that lifestyle, even though I'm still a Christian. Junior year in high school was a huge turning point in my life because it was the year my whole view of art changed. I think this is largely attributed to the fact that I read To Kill a Mockingbird for summer reading. To Kill a Mockingbird was the book that snowballed my love for good literature and novel art. I found I couldn't enjoy Christian books anymore because they were more often than not poorly written and just lifetime movie clones. When I got to college, I became obsessed with a band called Deus Vail. Don't worry, this all connects. I watched an interview the band did once, and they were asked how fans reacted to learning Deus Vail was a Christian band. Lead singer and songwriter Wes answered,
"Well, being a Christian band definitely boxes us in some. I mean, being labeled that because there's so many assumptions, I think, that come with that. But, you know, we're all believers in this group, and we're excited about that. It's in the music because it's a part of us, and we pour ourselves into the music. But we don't really try to sell the fact that we're a Christian band, and this is kind of a business, too, you know. So musically and artistically, it is a part of who we are, but we don't really market as a Christian band."
This answer really spoke to me. Our art shouldn't be labeled. It should be good. If the artist is a Christian, this should be embedded in the art but not forced on the audience. I began to yearn for a novel as good as Deus Vail was a band, and through a Christian literature course I took in college, discovered Marilyn Robinson. Robinson is the real deal. There is nothing to grab our attention when reading her stories, and no grand adventure. It is just life, and what comes out of it is beautiful. Housekeeping revolves around two sisters, Ruthie and Lucille. When their mother commits suicide, they are taken in by their grandmother, then their two aunts, and finally by their strange aunt Sylvie. The book begs to ask the question, what does it mean to keep a good house, which forces the audience to question femininity? The characters are so well developed, and the story is so complex in its simplicity, and I love it. I love when books take small or seemingly unworthy moments and make them extraordinary through characters and dialogue and good writing. And what is really marvelous is that Robinson doesn't need to write Jesus' name on every page like most Christian authors. Her writing itself gives glory to God and reveals more truth in comparison. Housekeeping is a brilliant book and highly recommended. Definitely a best book for 2014. So that is my list of best and worst books of 2014. Let me know the best and worst books you read last year in the comments below. If you like this and want to hear more, be sure to subscribe and give this video a thumbs up. Also be sure to check out my blog, The Reader. I blog weekly, and the last week of every month I post an episode of the Gourmet Reader podcast. Thanks for listening, and keep on reading.